Okay, welcome everyone to the June 28, 2023 9/11 and Other Deep State Crimes Monthly Teleconference. Craig, you'll take the role, please.
Yeah, okay. So we have Craig McKee and Cheryl Curtis. We have Adam Eisenberg, Barry Zwicker, Lynn Cornelison, Paul Zaremka, Barbara Honegger, Frank Tolopko, Vern Tishman, Sheila Casey. And there may be, did I miss anybody?
Maybe Barry Zwicker?
Yeah, we got you, Barry.
Okay, my hearing ain't too good.
Well, I'm going to speak as, you know, clearly as possible, and you let me know if I'm not speaking clearly enough, okay?
Yep.
Okay. So, yeah, so I think unless I missed anybody, that's our role so far.
Okay, great. Okay, and
somebody just joined. Who just connected?
Let's see. I don't see anybody new.
Okay, all right.
Let's
go
on the next page. Let's see. Okay.
Craig, did you get Adam Ruff on your roll call?
Oh, that's right. I forgot to mention Adam, yeah, who's on the same line with Adam Eisenberg. Okay, good.
Okay, great. So now we'll approve the agenda. Are there any objections to the agenda as written and shared? Okay, hearing none, the agenda is approved, and let's get started. Craig is going to be here to talk about this new group that's formed, as you all know. And so, Craig, I'm just going to turn it over to you. I don't think you need an introduction with this group.
Probably not, yeah. So thank you, everybody, for coming tonight. I did request time to talk about this subject because, you know, I think it's kind of typical of what's been happening in our movement, that we just kind of accept everything, every development, you know, as if everything is for the good of the movement and for the good of our efforts, and it seems like there's not a lot of thought goes into what the implications of some developments in movement are. When I heard about this, I mean, I wasn't surprised to hear about this group being formed. I mean, first of all, it's not a new group. Let's get this straight off the bat. What we're talking about is three basically dormant entities in the truth movement kind of being bundled together to make a new organization, you know, that has already, you know, has already begun asking for donations. And that in itself, you know, is a concern because there's only so much money to go around in the movement when we, you know, so the more organizations we have asking for donations, you know, we have to really think about whether this is something that's beneficial or not, because, you know, it means that money that people might have given to architects and engineers before, or perhaps the lawyers committee, you know, that some of that money, you know, we already have seen that, you know, Richard Gage's departure from architects and engineers had an impact. In that it's, you know, it's siphoned off donations from architects and engineers, and now we've got this new organization, which presumably is going to be attempting to do the same thing. Given that this organization, I don't really know what sort of what new that it's going to offer. I mean, I'll just quickly mention that it for those who don't know, the International Center for 9/11 Justice is basically a repackaging of the International Center for 9/11 Studies, which is the organization that put on the Toronto hearings in 2011. It's also the Journal of 9/11 Studies, and it's the 9/11 Consensus Panel. Why these three needed to be under one roof, I think, people will have maybe some thoughts to express on that in the Q&A. We'll see. But, basically my initial concern, and in order to get into the kind of details about this, I have to get into some of the history of the movement and the attempts by a group that I quite confidently referred to as a cabal, of a disinformation cabal. In fact, I'll go further and I'll say it's a COINTELPRO operation that has been for the past, more than 15 years, has been trying to essentially poison the movement by sowing division and confusion over the Pentagon issue. Why the Pentagon issue is important. Some people will ask, well why is the Pentagon so important? We've already got such solid information, such solid evidence concerning the World Trade Center. Why do we need the Pentagon? Well, I think the short answer to that is that the Pentagon is that there's only one entity that could have faked the plane crash at the Pentagon, and that is the U.S. government. There's no other way to read this. And I've heard people do this. If they're not prepared to admit how strong the evidence is that 9/11 was an inside job, they may very well try to hang on to the idea that, well, maybe terrorists got into the towers and placed explosives. I mean, this is, in my opinion, a crazy idea, and it doesn't hold water at all. But my position has always been that we have that the strength of our case is a cumulative case. It is all the evidence weighed together that becomes absolutely overwhelming and irrefutable. And to just say, well, we only need one part of the evidence, to me is a terrible mistake. And I always like to sort of connect. I always sort of think about, think of this as like an investigation that, if you had a homicide investigation, and the cops had fingerprints on a gun, they wouldn't just stop investigating because, well, we've got this one really great piece of evidence. We don't need any more than this. We'll just focus on the fingerprints. I mean, they would try to build a case in many different ways to make it a slam dunk. So about this cabal, when I first got involved in the truth movement, that goes back to about 2010 when I started blogging about it, it became obvious to me almost immediately that there was something very fishy going on in the truth movement. There were people, when you would bring up the very legitimate evidence concerning Lloyd England, for example, there was a whole kind of a crew of people who would sort of pounce on that. Sorry, I'm just sort of sequestering myself into a separate room here with the door closed. Who would jump on that and talk about how the citizen investigation team duo of Ranke and Marquis, how, because they really exposed the deception that of the Lloyd England story. And so the attempts to attack this evidence, which is very important because Lloyd England's, account is held up as something that really supports the official story. If you believe it all, and if it all holds together, then it supports the official story. But in fact, it doesn't take a very close look at this story to see how it just doesn't stand up at all. So I noticed all these people that were attacking any questions asked about the story, and attacking CIT and saying that they were they were being mean to these, to this very nice old man, Lloyd England. And it just kind of struck me as very weird at the time, very didn't ring true. And, you know, this continues to this day. The attacks on CIT by David Chandler and Wayne Costi and other members of this cabal are so over the top and so dishonest that I simply cannot take them seriously as truthers, despite all the, you know, the reputable work that they may have done on other areas of 9/11 research. And I do want to point out at this point that this new International Center for 9/11 Justice, that David Chandler is a member of the board of directors. So is Kevin Ryan, who's another supporter of this cabal. Ryan, in fact, is the you know, the person who decides whether anything gets published at the Journal of 9/11 Studies. And we were told by Ted Walter, who's the new executive director of this new organization, we were told about 3 weeks ago that that Ryan is not going to be publishing any more Pentagon material in the Journal of 9/11 Studies, and that any anything new that anybody wants to offer can be posted in their debated topics forum, which to me is just kind of like it's like tokenism. It's like, well, they've got this little corner where people can fight it out over the controversial topics. You know, it's perpetuating this myth that the Pentagon is a controversial subject. It is not a controversial subject. We have been conned into believing that it's controversial by Chandler and Wayne Costi and Ken Jenkins and John Wyndham and Jim Hoffman and Victoria Ashley and the rest of this crew that has just been lobbying. They've been lobbying in public and behind the scenes for all these years. And I just want to read something. I put this in an article several years back, and I think I may even have read it. I may even have read it in a call, one of our teleconference calls some time back. But I think it kind of sums up the absurdity of what this cabal has done to the movement, and see if you what you think about it. This is an excerpt from an article that I wrote. So what would you think if a group of truth activists known for other areas of 9/11 research turned their attention to writing papers, making videos, giving talks, and doing interviews, telling us all the ways they thought NIST's analysis of the World Trade Center destruction was correct? What if they almost never questioned NIST's findings, but instead did everything they could to undermine any challenges to NIST from members of the truth movement? What if they told us they did this to keep the movement from losing credibility, to keep us from looking like crazy conspiracy theorists with wild ideas about government agents planting explosives in the towers? Of course, this group would also make it clear that they don't believe the whole NIST report, and they don't believe Al-Qaeda was behind 9/11, so they couldn't be accused of supporting the official story. But virtually all the information they presented on the World Trade Center destruction concerned what they thought NIST had gotten right, with next to nothing about what it got wrong. What would you think of such a group? For how many years would you politely accept their support for one aspect of the official narrative after another? Would you be concerned when they made many statements that seemed almost identical to those made by Popular Mechanics or any number of other 9/11 debunkers? This is just what is happening with respect to what took place or didn't take place at the Pentagon on 9/11. The cabal supporting numerous elements of the Pentagon official story is not hypothetical. It is very real. Its members want us to think that the government is telling the truth about a 757 hitting the Pentagon. They're also big believers in the authenticity of virtually all the evidence provided by the government. They diminish as outlandish the idea of a staged crash scene and assert that this idea results from speculation and confirmation bias. For years, this group has been writing papers and making presentations that something that is almost indistinguishable from the official story of what happened to the plane that was seen approaching the Pentagon. They use spin and repetitive talking points to gain support, suggesting that they alone are using the scientific method, and that the same people who brought you controlled demolition of the towers have now turned their attention to the Pentagon. They tell us that they have brought closure to the debate, even as they continue producing large amounts of supposedly new material. So that's the excerpt that I wanted to read to you. And when you think about it, I mean, this would set off alarm bells for any reasonable truther if somebody did what I'm suggesting. If somebody were to, praise the NIST reports and talk about, and only talk about the parts that are correct, because obviously as the other side loves to point out, there are some things in the official story that are true. And they like to kind of imply that I'm saying that for something to be true, it can't be part of the official story, which of course I never say. So that's a straw man that they love to throw out there. But I mean, it would be obvious how unreasonable that is if that's what they were doing, if it was about the NIST report. But somehow with the Pentagon, we seem to put up with enormous amounts of dishonesty and deceit, basically, under the guise of, well, they're scientists and they're just looking at the evidence. You know, they love to talk about how they use the scientific method. I don't think they do use the scientific method. I think they just talk about the scientific method. If there's something that doesn't suit their story, they'll make up a scenario. They'll make up a scenario and make it sound like it's scientifically based. You know, like when they describe how they know that Lloyd England's cab was hit by the short end of the top of the second pole instead of the pole that Lloyd England very clearly claims was hit his cab, which is the long part of the first pole. Problem is, the long part of the first pole couldn't have hit his cab because it's on the wrong side of the fuselage of the plane, and that's something I've written about in detail. And I if anybody has any doubts about the Lloyd England story, why it's wrong and why this cabal has used it in the most unbelievably dishonest ways possible, I would refer you to a two-part article that I did that's on truthandshadows.com. It's right there on the first page. You just have to scroll down to find it. Now, just to give you some of the names, I've mentioned some of them already, but David Chandler, Wayne Coffey, Ken Jenkins, John Wyndham, Jonathan Cole, Fran Schur, Frank Legg, Jim Hoffman, Victoria Ashley, Warren Stutt, Kevin Ryan, Dwayne Dietz, Chris Sarnes, Adam Fitzgerald, Nelson Martins, Ed Brotherton, Simon Faulkner, Adam Taylor, and a number of others. That's the kind of the current. Frank Legg has passed away, but most of the rest of them are still around. And anything I post on Facebook, there's a bunch of them that will descend on it. So my concern is, first of all, this new organization, if people, it sounds good. It has a nice looking website, and, it might be tempting to say, wow, they really have covered, they've got a nice overview of the whole 9/11 story. Let's get behind that. But honestly, if David Chandler and Kevin Ryan are part of the board of directors, then I don't trust that organization, and I would not want us putting any giving it any support at all. I do want to just quickly mention that the three entities that have been put together. First of all, the Toronto hearings, in 2011, they declined to invite anybody that would talk about the evidence for that there was no 757 impact with the building. What they did do, and that this was good at least, was they invited Barbara to speak and gave her a 25-minute slot, which was shorter than the other slots, but a 25-minute slot to talk about the evidence for explosives in the building. So that was good, but it was still kind of a bit of tokenism there. I think citizen investigation should have been invited, and they weren't because the hearing they didn't want anything too controversial. So that's my problem with that. Then you have the Journal of 9/11 Studies, which has published several papers, talking about arguing that a large plane did hit the Pentagon. There's nothing on there coming from the other point of view, and we know where Kevin Ryan stands on this. So I don't imagine we ever will see anything published there that contradicts that impact position. Then that brings us to the consensus panel. Now, the consensus panel has, passed, I believe it's 51 points. And as far as I can tell, I have no problem with any of the 51 points they've passed. My problem is not with what they have published. My problem is with what they have not said and what they will not say. They have not even considered a single point that deals with what caused the damage to the Pentagon. And even if they had, even if Elizabeth Woodworth and David Ray Griffin had allowed such a point to be considered, they had allowed such a thing to be considered. We have another voice going in the background there. I don't know.
I'm gonna put you in lecture mode, Craig. Just hang on.
Yeah, let's do that. Okay, good. So the consensus panel, for those who aren't familiar with the way it's set up, you need 85% approval on any point for it to be adopted, and that means that depending on how many people are on at any given time. I believe, I haven't done the math recently, but I believe that if you have four people that vote against a point, that basically blocks that point. Well, this cabal has at least four members on the consensus panel among their membership, including Chandler, including Jonathan Cole, including Francher, and including Dwayne Deets. And I may have actually forgotten one in there. So they were always in a position to block any Pentagon point. And I'm sure that had there been a point proposed that had addressed the question of whether a large plane had hit the building or not, arguing that that one didn't, I'm sure that they would have been voting against it. So you've got three organizations that have all in one way or another marginalized the essential evidence that no 757 ever hit the Pentagon. This evidence is overwhelming, and this cabal and its hangers-on have not only have they been pushing this point for many, many years, but they have basically been trying to get their fingers into every organization in the 9/11 truth movement and to get control of it. Chandler and that group, they have control over Scientists for 9/11 Truth. They had at one time they had control of the Truth Action Project through Wayne Costi, and they had an official position that a large plane did hit the Pentagon at one point, and I think they backed down from that. But this group has also tried to get their hands on AE 9/11 Truth by encouraging the board of AE to enter into a formal advisory kind of arrangement between Scientists for 9/11 Truth and AE 9/11 Truth. Fortunately, the board of AE said no to that. They've also attempted to get their fingers into the Lawyers Committee, and now they've held the balance of power with the consensus panel all these years. and now this new organization, which is going to, you know, siphon off funds and support from other organizations that I think are more reputable. So, you know, not only has this sort of attempt to control different organizations been going on all this time, but behind the scenes there have been efforts to anybody that takes a position or puts out a paper or anything supporting the no impact position, you know, they will be lobbied and pressured by this group. And there are people on this call who know this very well. The group, you know, asserted pressure over Richard Gage, David Ray Griffin, Barry Zwicker, Peter Dale Scott, Massimo Mazzucco, Kelly David, and others. And in addition to trying to strong arm the movement into accepting the bulk of the official story of the Pentagon, we've also heard rumblings in recent years that they want to push the movement also into believing that that Shanksville was the subject, was the location of a plane crash where the plane buried itself completely under the ground. They've been trying to convince people of this also. Now, I want to, you know, if you have any doubts, I mean, this is something that, you know, requires a lot of background to understand. But just to give you an example of the dishonesty that we're talking about, Wayne Costey quoted Craig Ranke from Citizen Investigation Team. And Ranke was basically saying, and this is in my Lloyd England, part two of this article of my Lloyd England piece, where Costey quoted Ranke, where Ranke was saying basically that, you know, some people think that it was the short arm of the second pole, not the long part of the first pole, that hit the cab. Well, he took the beginning of that quote off and made it sound like Ranke was saying that he thought it was the short end of the second pole. And I pointed this out years ago, and it stayed up on this website that Costey created basically to mock me, to ridicule me. You know, he kept it up there. I don't know if he's since taken it down, but I mean, this, how can you read that any other way than an absolute dishonest attempt to trick people into thinking that Craig Ranke was admitting it was this other part of the poll, which, you know, again, I could go into sort of detail if anybody really wants to know in the Q&A, you know, why that's significant. You know, I'm happy to answer that. But Chandler, you know, the Lloyd England thing too. First of all, they claim that Lloyd England never said it was a long part of the poll, which he did on numerous occasions. And there's an interview that CIT does with England where they're talking about where his car was on the highway, and England is maintaining that his car wasn't on the overpass; it was more to the north. And Chandler makes it sound like that England is saying, "No, it's not that pole that hit my cab." It's so obvious when you watch the video interview, which is linked in the article as well. It's so obvious that this is not true, that he's playing games. So I guess what I'll do is I'll wrap this up, I guess, and I do want to – I have Adam Ruff and Adam Eisenberg are both on here, and I do want to bring them in to add their points of view. So I'm not going to go on – as I could go on for a very long time, but the reason I am raising alarm about this new organization is, first of all, David Chandler being a board member, like – This is not a healthy thing to have the same people in control of multiple organizations. This is just unhealthy, regardless of who those people are. And, you know, we know that with Elizabeth Woodworth being a board member, and we know what her performance was regarding the Pentagon with the consensus panel. To me, a great, you know, consensus points would have been just adopting things that David Ray Griffin had in his books, because he covered it all. So I think that's unfortunate that wasn't, those weren't the consensus points, but But I think that this new organization is going to serve a gatekeeping role, and it's going to divert a lot of people's energies into an operation that is going to make sure that we don't get to give a serious hearing to the essential Pentagon evidence. And I understand that they have this debated topics forum, but that's just a way of kind of reinforcing the idea that this is a controversial subject and let people battle it out, you know, in the debated topics forum. They have essentially succeeded in all these years in getting the Pentagon evidence taken off the table, because so many people that are naively are pushing unity. They think unity is the be all and end all. And so that they have effectively taken this off the table because people don't want, you know, they don't want the controversy. They don't want the unpleasantness. And so they say, well, let's just put the Pentagon. We don't need the Pentagon. We can put that aside. But the Pentagon is absolutely crucial to the case that we are making to the world that 9/11 was an inside job. So I'm going to stop there. We'll keep the questions for after the two Adams have had a chance to weigh in. If that's okay with you, Cheryl, to just have them come in and just give their comments and then go to Q&A. Does that work? I guess Cheryl's probably muted too. Okay, Cheryl, are you there?
Oh, sorry, I forgot I was muted. Yeah, I think that's a great plan. Let's do it.
Okay. So can you unmute Adam Eisenberg?
They're unmuted.
Okay. Yeah. So why don't we start with Adam Russ? And Adam, why don't you just add whatever you would like to add to what I've had to say?
Okay. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, perfectly.
Okay. What I would add to what Craig McKee has said is that the naivete among so-called truthers is pretty extreme. So I wanted to tell a true story very briefly about another movement and how heavily that movement was infiltrated. And we know this now through documents that have been released through court trials. So many people are aware, and some are not, that there was a standoff between the Bundy family and the Bureau of Land Management in 2014. So to make a long story short, Ammon Bundy and his family were basically attacked by the Bureau of Land Management. It was a land dispute, and it's not really important the details of the protest itself or what happened at the protest, but what happened afterwards. So a lot of people don't know this, but the Bundys were arrested much later. And they were put in jail awaiting trial, and they were abused quite a bit while in jail. And they had these lengthy court trials. And what the Bundys did subsequent to their standoff at the Bundy Ranch was Ammon Bundy went up to Oregon and occupied a wildlife refuge in Oregon, in protest of the way a ranching family was being treated up there in Oregon. So there was two trials that took place that Ammon Bundy was involved with. Now, it came out at those trials that the FBI had inserted 15 paid informants into the Oregon refuge scenario that were gathering information on the protesters. So they had 15 operatives working from inside the group. And these people were, trying to gather evidence and so forth against the protesters. So this didn't come out until after the trial. But there were points, because it was a very small group that occupied that refuge in Oregon, there were many, many points in time where there were more FBI informants inside that refuge than there were actual protesters. So this is the reality of the way the government does things and the way COINTELPRO works. They believe in a theory called full spectrum dominance. That's what our military believes in. They believe in dominating the skies, the seas, the land. They believe in dominating their enemy in all respects. So they do the same thing with movements like the 9/11 Truth Movement that they want to stop or render useless. So they will devote huge amounts of resources to stop the 9/11 Truth Movement, for example. So there's many, many examples of them going way, way above and beyond what anybody would think was rational, but they'll do it because this is so important to them. Because we got to remember that the people that did 9/11, if they are exposed, they are going to swing from trees, okay? They're going to be executed for treason and for crimes against humanity. So they will not hesitate to do anything to prevent that from happening. So if you are familiar with a journalist named Wayne Madsen, Wayne wrote an article quite a while back about what he called the Q group within the NSA. Now, the NSA Q group, according to Wayne, was devoted completely and totally to stopping the 9/11 Truth Movement. And it was apparently well-staffed with people. But we don't know how many people, what they did, how heavily they were involved, how heavily, for example, they infiltrated social media. We don't know. But we do know what Walmart did just in response to a film that was being produced by a documentarian. The film was called Walmart, The High Cost of Low Price. So Walmart, in order to preempt people watching this documentary, which was very critical of Walmart, they put together literally a war room staffed with over 100 people. And they went out all over social media to try to discredit the film before it was released. So for people to think that the 9/11 Truth Movement is not heavily infiltrated is so naive, it's almost comical. In fact, it's not realistic to believe that a truther would be that naive, to believe that every person that calls themselves a truther is actually honest and sincere 9/11 researcher. So we've got to get past this idea that we're all on the same team, because we're not all on the same team. So I guess the main point I want to make with this is that not only are we heavily infiltrated, but our skills at detecting infiltrators and people that are not honest are very, very poor. So it's one of the things that I've been concentrating on a lot is figuring out how to spot disinformation and what the telltale signs are and what to do about it after you spot it. So, you know, funnily enough, one of the best ways to detect someone who is not honest is found in a saying from the Bible. And there's a point in the Bible where it says, "You shall know them by the fruits they bear. A corrupt tree cannot bear good fruit." So that, I've used that as kind of my guide stone for detecting people that don't have the best interests of the truth movement in their hearts. And I've found that, you know, for example, a lot of what Craig McKee said about dishonesty being presented as though it's a legitimate debate about the Pentagon, his articles are very thorough and full of all sorts of examples of people calling themselves truthers that are lying, flagrantly, blatantly lying to people, and particularly about Lloyd England. They lied, and they got caught lying. So one of the biggest examples of this was David Chandler and Jonathan Cole wrote an article, a paper, expressing their opinion on what happened at the Pentagon. So in response to this, a citizen investigation team produced a very extensive, like almost 50 pages, response, which was referenced all over the place, which was linked to a lot of their evidence and so forth. And that this refutation of that paper was so stunning and overwhelming, and I mean, they literally eviscerated Chandler's paper and Jonathan Cole's paper. They ripped it to shreds systematically, very thoroughly and completely. But Chandler and Cole never responded to anything that was said in that paper. And they left their paper, which had been thoroughly and completely debunked and discredited, they left that paper up for years and years. I don't know, it might still be posted in the 9/11 Journal. I'm not positive about that. But if it is, that shows me that they have a dishonest intent and they can't be trusted. So in my book, I'll just leave it at this, and then Adam Eisenberg can maybe step in and say what he thinks. But you're not a truther if you can't look at evidence that you're wrong and admit that you're wrong. If you can't admit that you're wrong and you can't admit that some evidence is important, and just step aside and let it be developed and expanded upon and used in our case, you know, our overall case, then what are you doing in the truth movement? What are your real motivations if you're spending years and years trying to discredit the Pentagon research that CIT has done, that Craig McKee has done, that I myself have done? What are you really up to if you're not trying to take down the official story? So I'll just leave it at that, and maybe Adam Eisenberg can step in. One last point, though, actually, I just thought of this. Quite a while back, there was a big controversy where Richard Gage had seemingly endorsed Citizen Investigation Team and their investigation. And then he retracted his endorsement. And that prompted many of us, including several of us on this call here, to write a letter urging Richard Gage to, you know, correct the record, because he did a lot of damage to the reputation of Citizen Investigation Team and so forth. And Richard still to this day essentially just ignored our letter, and it was signed by, I think, 28 people, something like that. And he just ignored it. And so, you know, the reality is that we are infiltrated. There are people working to destroy the 9/11 truth movement. It's real. It's not imaginary. COINTELPRO is real, folks. So that's what I have to say. And go ahead and take it away. Anybody else that wants to comment?
Yeah, so that's great. Thank you, Adam. And we've got Adam Eisenberg with us also. And do you want to add anything to that, Adam?
Which Adam? No.
Adam Eisenberg now.
I know, I'm just being silly. Good evening, everybody. My name is Adam Eisenberg. First and foremost, to those of you that I've met with and spoke with and have shared space with, I just want to say thank you. To get me to this point in my journey, you assisted me along the way. And so I just I really can't thank you enough for that. In December of 2020, I decided after looking at a world burning that I was finally going to take a step back and pursue my heart's true passion. And that has always been, justice for ultimately the crime that was committed at the Pentagon. As a member of Alpha Company 3rd U.S. Infantry from September 11th to 30th, I spent approximately 240 hours on site during an operation that was called Operation Noble Eagle. What I saw in those moments stuck with me for the rest of my life, and I guess you can say I've never bought into the official narrative. I've been saying what I've been saying for a long time. Nobody's put me up to this. I haven't been paid for this. I've been called everything you can possibly imagine because my name is Eisenberg. People think that I'm a globalist, a Zionist, whatever you can possibly imagine. But I can assure you this is just an individual pursuing justice because I can't deny this, basically did not see. In December of 2020, I took my message to the world and started just telling people, hey, look, you know, I was there. I didn't see plane parts. I didn't see anything that looked like bodies, luggage, any of this stuff. And not only that, I have an additional feather in my cap. I also have extensive experience when it comes to airline engine parts, specifically Boeing 757 200 series plane parts. I work for one of two companies that manufactured Pratt & Whitney. So I'd like to say I'm a credible witness. Well, I started going out and I started to talk to the world about this. And sooner than later, I realized that I should probably start to link up with the 9/11 truth movement. And so I reached out to Dan Hanley, and I'm sure several of you know who he is, because I wanted to find a credible pilot that could start speaking to me about my beliefs on the subject. And he ultimately led me to a number of people. And the first person I wanted to speak to the most, because he was like the most opinionated, was David James. I can prove, and I'm willing to prove here pretty soon. I've got two members of my team on this phone call that in the coming days are going to be receiving screenshots of every single email exchange I've ever had with the people I'm about to mention. And given their history with the truth movement and what they can already prove, I have no doubt that these individuals are going to be able to do a lot of work with these emails. I was very polite to David Chandler, and from the get-go, I thought he would be receptive to talking with me. Not soon after that, we had a phone call, and from the first moment that I was on the phone with him, by the manner in which he approached me, I knew that I was stepping into a situation that was not good. And I was very surprised that a scientist would treat me the way that he did. It caught me completely off guard. And quite frankly, I was shocked. The interaction pretty much happened while I was, ready to have a long discussion with the man about everything. It shortly ended. His temper was not good, and it was he's very abrasive. And so I immediately right then and there started to realize that I really need to look into these people a little bit more that I was speaking to, because I just believed at the time that if a serious crime was going to be committed, and it would likely have to have infiltration amongst the population that's trying to bring awareness to it. And it wasn't long into my journey into studying the 9/11 Truth Movement that I came along a quote from a man named John Edward Kendrick. Some of you may know him, some of you may not. My understanding, he's a dentist in Kansas City, Missouri. But he said these words, and it made me kind of think twice about what I was doing at the moment. He said, "To our detriment, many leaders in the 9/11 Truth Movement are really misleaders. Ample evidence exists to convene grand juries and issue indictment." He said, "Aid to Israel should immediately, and the USA citizens demand reparations from Israel." Well, I go to the Israel route because my focus is all the way on the Pentagon. And I just had to think right then and there. And I just thought that something wasn't right about that interaction with David. But at the same time, I also wanted to give him the benefit of the doubt. You know, I figured that for a long period of time of being criticized, a person's tolerance can wear thin. I've got an old cranky father that's like that, so I was like, you know what, no big deal. I'm willing to let it slide. Well, not long after that, I ran into Wayne Coste, and I was trying my best to have decent conversation with David Chandler, and that proved to be very difficult. And I'm not going to get into the ins and outs of that. You guys are going to be able to read that in my book, and you're going to be able to see that in my documentary series. But after David Chandler got involved, I soon came to Wayne Coste. At that point in time, before I ever came to Wayne, I started to, I stumbled onto a lot. My proximity to the event opens doors that even the best research efforts can't open. And I can say that now because I'm an independent researcher at Harvard, and I'm getting to the bottom of these tools pretty quickly, and I'm having to file FOIA requests. But long story short, mass murderers like to brag. And, my proximity to the event, I guess you can say, is it wasn't hard for me to stumble into things. And right about the time I met Wayne Coste, I started to stumble into the elements that were actually inserted onto the Pentagon to basically, in my opinion, both create this chaos and murder and cover it up. I did a live on Instagram where I started to talk about my evidence of these individuals. That video is still available on my profile. You can go to it. It's under the Exposing Lee Wheelbarger tab. But basically, I came to Wayne Coste. He wanted to talk about damage at the Pentagon. And, I point blank sent him this video because in this video, I not only proved to him that Lee Wheelbarger is the eye of the storm, but he had access to the crime scene. He went to extreme late lengths to basically cover up the attempts I was making to hold him accountable. And ultimately, he had no authority. And he says things about damage to the building. He says things about parts. He basically gives himself away. And I say this man's name because all of you can look into him as well. I'm not doing anything that you guys can do. I just fortunately stumbled into him out of sheer luck. But I gave all this information to Wayne Coste, and I'll never forget what he said. Two words: go away. That's scientist Wayne Coste, go away. So I've got proof of all this. You guys are going to see that. But moving right along, there were other people that were mentioned, and so I'm going to say their names now too. Not long after that, when I was told to go away, by Wayne Coste, suddenly on my Instagram, Nelson Martin showed up accusing me of being a government agent and challenged me to a debate. I quickly responded to him that I would absolutely debate him anywhere, anytime, and he immediately pumped the brakes and changed his entire scene, I guess you could say. I never trusted the man, but I at least gave him a shot He sent me some of his work, and I found some of his work to be intriguing. And to be quite honest with you, I think some of his some of the stuff that he points out regarding Dulles actually deserves a little bit of deeper investigation. I use his own work against. I could basically use his own work against him in a debate. But long story short, I was trying to work with a man, and in my opinion, the way people approach the information you give them and the their attitude towards collaboration in 9/11, you know, regarding 9/11, says a lot. And I don't know, something just didn't seem right. You know, I can say a lot about why I feel that way, but I'll be honest with you guys. I want to wait till my book's released because I don't know. I don't want to get myself into a legal situation, but suffice to say, something didn't seem right with him. And shortly after, I got introduced to Ed Brotherton. As you guys all know, Ed Brotherton not long ago informed the FBI that there was a gathering taking place via the war room, which I don't care if they're going to do that, but I think we can all kind of agree that the FBI has been weaponized and that truth right now, truthers are basically the target. And so I've never trusted that man. And there are other reasons for that as well. But ultimately, he was in the presence of myself and Ed Brotherton and myself and Nelson Martins and Ken Jenkins. They introduced me to Ken Jenkins. That's what I was trying to say. And ultimately, that's where I really started to see that I was getting into a situation that was truly dangerous. My lead suspect, I make no bones about it, he is. You know, his name is Carmen Lee Wheelbarger. He's a technical weapons expert. He had highest level of counterterrorism access. He had access to the scene. I can prove using his own words that he basically was the only one that had chain of custody evidence, of the evidence. I can basically prove using Adam Fitzgerald's interview of Schwartz that Lee Wheelbarger was removed from the scene, and I got Lee Wheelbarger on record saying that fire and that he was actually there the entire time. So I'm just going to say it, you guys, 9/11 truth is about to be reinvigorated, because in order for there to be a conspiracy, there would have to be people. There would have to be people on the ground doing things with access. These people, you know, I guess without saying everything, is these people got very cocky. But long story short, Ken Jenkins, without batting an eye, without a second of even hesitation, when I mentioned the word Lee Wheelbarger, he was the first person in the 9/11 truth movement that even knew who he was, and without batting an eye on that Zoom call, said, Lee Wheelbarger, what are you talking about? He's a nobody. That's not the case. He's a somebody. And so I challenge you, if you're listening to this, Ken Jenkins, as I've challenged you several times, you've told me that you've had notes on this man. You've offered to share those notes. I continue to ask for those notes. I have for over a year now, and you have been silent. And so I go then to the next person, to Adam Fitzgerald, who I will only refer to as Kermit from now on. If this man is a researcher, then I am a 600-pound gorilla. I believe that man is the muscle that is really operating for David Chandler, Wayne Coastey, and Ken Jenkins. In private conversations, David Chandler has told me that he endorses the man's work, and I don't see why that is, because the first time I ever heard about Adam Fitzgerald was when he, without question, came to my YouTube channel and publicly attacked me. Now, like the mass murderers I have on record, people in the 9/11 truth movement have gotten very, very comfortable playing their games. And it's obvious. And there are people on this call, not my team members, but there are people on this call who make it really obvious. But Adam Fitzgerald is one of those people. And he attacked me. He challenged me to a debate. He said that he could debate me in 10 minutes. I immediately publicly and privately told him, let's go. And in a true coward fashion, he went blank. went crickets. And of course, he left the video up, and you can still find it on YouTube to this day, him challenging me. So I don't know what to tell you guys when it comes to the 9/11 truth movement, but I can just tell you, I think it's full of spooks. They all say we're a bunch of spooks, but I think they're a bunch of spooks. And, you know, I'm just going to say it. I want to thank the people on my team that are present. I can just assure you all the years of banging your head against the wall are not going to be for nothing. And I also want to announce publicly for the first time that I'm going to be bringing forward a new witness to the event, and that's going to be happening soon. And that's all I got, you know, for this evening. I appreciate you guys being present tonight. Thank you.
Thanks, Adam. So I think, Cheryl, should we let's just open it up for Q&A, I think, and then we'll kind of see, you know, who would be the appropriate person to answer whichever question.
Okay. So up. I'm going to put it in Q&A, and it's going to mute everybody, and then I'll unmute you and the Adams, and then we'll do the Q&A. So just hang on.
Yeah. Great. Great.
Okay. Okay, so the problem with the Q&A mode is all the names disappear and I can't unmute people. So we're going to have to just work in open mode. So if everyone could please just try and mute yourself if you're going to be, you know, star six to mute yourself if you're going to be making noise while people are talking. And maybe just if you have a question, just kind of just say you do and we'll get started. Anyone want to go with a question for while you're thinking about that? Go ahead. Who's that?
Fern. Yeah, I have a number of questions.
Okay, and I have comments and questions, Barbara.
Okay. What was that? So Fern, you went. You said it first. Go first, and then followed by Barbara. Go ahead.
Okay, that's fine. I don't know anyone except Craig and Cheryl and Barry Zwicker and Barbara Hanega, that's who I know on this call. If you listen to Romano Institute 2016, you can find out about COINTELPRO and how it relates to George Bush and JFK assassination and Cuba and Russia and Gerald Ford and Jimmy Carter and the CIA and the coup that began in 1991. Like 9/11 did not just happen. The 1993 World Trade Center bombing did not just happen. And I live in New York City, and I was told about 9/11 three times. And my family created the World Trade Center Twin Towers, from the time this coup began in 1991, I started writing, and my documents are copyrighted, and sent on September 10th to two publishers on the morning of September 10th, which was followed in the evening by Rumsfeld saying there was 2.3 missing from the Pentagon. The next day, the Pentagon explosions, and then the taking down of World Trade Center Building 7 that held the duplicate accounting. That's one thing. And like Ray Kelly had an office in Washington, D.C. near the Pentagon, and he just became the police officer, you know. And what else do I have here? I have Bonnie Faulkner and Kevin Ryan. I often listen to it, and Demolition Access to the World Trade Center Twin Towers. I like Kevin Ryan. I have his book. And I can document so many things that no coincidences. Like when I would go to Los Alamos after my daughter, lived there, and I would have on the train, on the plane going there, they would have terror attacks in Colorado and all. My life has been, everything I do, I'm watched, and I've been questioning that since I came into program. It relates to Tishman Corporation. They're rebuilding Ground Zero as a shopping and performance center. And, you know, every area of life is affected, including these wars, by 9/11, which was the biggest bank robbery in global history until coronavirus. So it's not something that you can make fun of. It's about the killing of lives. 9/11 was a bank robbery, and it's about war. They created 7 wars. So I wanted to say that. And I guess I'm better at talking. But
do you have a question for either of the three people who presented, Fern?
Well, he said that COINTELPRO is alive. Sure they are, but you didn't show that. If you go to Danny Sheehan's 2006, and I'm not interested in saying who's bad or good, but like this is about war and taking out. They're rewriting education, they're rewriting science, and it relates to 9/11. So that's my. That's what I wanted to say, and I wrote much more. That's enough for now.
All right. Well, thank you, Fern. Okay. And Barbara, you're next. Go ahead.
Okay. Can you hear me all right?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, good. Well, it's hard to know where to start, you know. But I'd like to start by just putting some facts on the table, so that each individual on this call can weigh them as you will. And not everybody will weigh each of them the same, but they are facts. The first fact is that, first to comment, and that is that I essentially agree with everything that Craig said. We have some differences about the interpretation of the evidence, but we agree on a North path. And we agree that, a large 757 didn't hit where or when the official story says. So our positions are very similar for about 80%. And there is a reasonable difference of opinion about the other 20%. But I'm not going to get into that here because I just want to put some facts on the table about this new organization. To begin with. And the first fact on the table is that let's talk about some of these individuals. Kevin Ryan. We have to acknowledge, and I think Craig did this, that Kevin Ryan and, for instance, David Chandler, they gained their credibility in the movement by what they've done about the World Trade Center. And that is a fact that we have to acknowledge. But then they, like any good disinformation agent, and I'm not saying they are like Craig is, but the evidence sure is pretty strong. A good disinformation agent will establish their credibility and then use it to try to get people to believe disinformation later. And I think that is what has happened with everything they've done about the Pentagon. Let me just remind people that Kevin Ryan's, and this was shocking to me, Kevin Ryan's book, Another 19. I believe it's chapter 10, but anyway, there's only one chapter on the Pentagon. I think it's the second paragraph on the first page of that chapter. And this is almost verbatim in words. In his book, that we in the 9/11 Truth Movement, that it's incumbent upon those in the Truth Movement to accept as much of the official story about the Pentagon as possible. Now, can you imagine anybody who's a real truther saying that about the World Trade Center? Can you imagine? Okay, so right there, I have a problem with Kevin Ryan, but only about the Pentagon. Okay, now let's go to to David Chandler. I'm not going to go into the details, but I have had personal experience, and many of you on the call know about this. Craig and I had a long conversation. Gosh, time flies, but Craig, it was about 3 weeks ago, wasn't it?
Yeah.
We had a long conversation about this this new organization when it first launched. And David Chandler not only tried to take over the lawyers committee, he nominated himself for the board out of the blue. Had never had anything to do with the lawyers committee. And then after he nominated himself, he and Adam Fitzgerald and David Coste and the cabal, and they are definitely a cabal, Ken Jenkins, they wrote the most vicious letters to the lawyers committee board, to every single member of the board except for me. I'm now chairman of the board. You know, I have proven my bona fides to this movement and to the lawyers committee. They trust me. They honor me. I do a hell of a lot of work. I'm the only, for a long time, I was the only unpaid volunteer. And they called me a fraud, a liar, which is not true. And I had to pay for an attorney to threaten them. And they backed down. And, of course, Chandler was not allowed to be on the board. There was actually a formal vote not to allow him on the board. Okay, now, those are two people that I have problems with about the Pentagon, as Craig does, on this new International Center for 9/11 Justice. However, there are two people there, that I think balance the scale somewhat on the other side. And one of them is James Gourley. Craig didn't mention James Gourley, but he's a critical player. James Gourley basically is the main thrust behind this new organization. James Gourley was the convener of the Toronto 9/11 hearings for the 10th anniversary. He was the editor of the 9/11 the Toronto 9/11 report. Interestingly, it's terrible that Graham McQueen is no longer with us. But Graham McQueen was on the board of this organization, but unfortunately died just before it was launched. Graham McQueen and James Gourley did invite me to speak at the Toronto 9/11 hearings. I was the only speaker on the Pentagon. They wanted the evidence for pre-placed explosives at the Pentagon because it was in resonance with and parallel to the evidence for pre-placed explosives at the World Trade Center, which was the main focus of the Toronto 9/11 hearings, after all. And it has been in the movement for over 20 years. So they did allow a Pentagon presentation. What's fascinating is they explicitly, Graham McQueen, the rest of their convening board, and James Gourley were very explicit that you couldn't even use the word plane. I couldn't even use the word plane. And if anybody's ever seen my full presentation at the Toronto hearings, there was, of course, this wonderful panel of experts, including the former Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of Italy, Justice Imposimoto. And he actually said during the Q's and A's, after my presentation, he said, "Why have you not talked about the planes?" And I had to turn to James Gourley and the other members of the panel, you know, the conveners, who were sitting at a table to my left. I was at the podium, and it's all on videotape, and I had to say, do I have permission to answer that question? So there's been I think it's important for people to realize that the reason this cabal, in my opinion, doesn't want any non-official story information about the Pentagon is because it really, their Achilles heel is the evidence that Flight 77 did not arrive at the Pentagon. But in addition to that, if you are able to show that no 757 hit the building where or when they claim, by definition, it wasn't Flight 77. And that's what they don't want the people to know. They don't want people to know that the planes that reached the targets were not the ones, at least for World Trade Center 2 for sure, and the Pentagon. Maybe World Trade Center 1, put a question mark on Pennsylvania. But those planes were not the ones that left who ended up at the targets. That is huge. And that's their Achilles heel, and they know it. Okay. The other thing that I wanted to mention that proves that this cabal is really bad, and that is they put on what they call the Pentagon Conference about, what was that, 3 or 4 years ago now in Denver, yeah. Colorado? And I went to that. Now, Craig wasn't able to go to that, but Bonnie Faulkner and I went to that. And they would not allow, I tried. Maybe, Craig, you tried too. I don't know. You have to speak to it yourself. But I tried to be able to speak. They refused. Chandler himself got back and said, well, you'll be able, like everyone else, to put one question on a card, and then it'll be up to Fran Schur to decide whether to read that question to the rest of us. So no one was allowed to speak who wasn't a member of the cabal, number one. And number two, this guy, John Wyndham. Now, he's got some really incredible credentials, but I think he has a PhD in something like chemistry that's not directly relevant to, I could be wrong about the chemistry, but he has a PhD in something that isn't directly relevant to 9/11. But he actually lies in his papers about my work, because everyone who has watched Behind the Smoke Curtain knows that what I do in Smoke Curtain is to prove that there was a plane destruction at the Pentagon, but it wasn't Flight 77. It wasn't that large of a plane, although it wasn't a small plane either, that it wasn't at the time or the place on the wall that they claim. And I'm going to tell you two things that happened at that Pentagon conference, and then I'll stop. That were really shocking. So after the Pentagon conference, we all went to Fran Schur and David Chandler's house, which is in the outskirts or, you know, kind of a suburb of Denver. And they are married. They bought that house together. Many people don't know they are a couple. Okay. So they have a beautiful house, and it was a lovely evening. Probably got there around 6 p.m., and they had a nice dinner. And it was a beautiful evening, and so most people were out in their very nice lawn and garden. But I sat at the dining room table, and Bonnie Faulkner was on the left of the table. To my immediate left was Wayne Coste. To my immediate right was David Chandler. And on the other side of the table, on David's side, on the side of the table, because Coste, myself, and Chandler were kind of bunched together at the end of the table. It was kind of an oblong table. And to the right of David Chandler Craig, what's the name of the little guy who, is it Frank Legge? No, not Legge. Warren Stutt. Yeah, Warren Stutt. Okay. Now, Warren Stutt is a kind of a technical guy who analyzes the flight data recorder data, okay? And he analyzes the military's radar data. Well, while we were sitting at the table, we were basically in a debate, because I was saying to these people, look, column 14 is where you claim a 757 hit, almost fully full of fuel, extremely heavy, going at about 550 miles an hour, and yet column 14 is still there. And on the second floor, which the official story, including you, say it hit. It's not only there, but it's still vertical. So you can't be right. And believe it or not, Wayne Coste then said, in front of Bonnie and everybody else, Wayne Coste then said, well, Barb, actually, we think that it's actually the column about 10 feet further in that you're talking about. So you're wrong. It's a column 10 feet further in. And I said, you've got to be kidding. Even if you were correct, that's a difference that makes no difference. 10 feet further in, and that column's still vertical and visible? You still cannot be true. And then the other shocking thing that happened is that I asked a question of Warren Stack. I said, Warren, can you tell me, can you give me, go into more detail about how you came to understand or believe that the radar data supports a south path? Because, you know, we've marshaled all this evidence for a north path, and I know it was a north path. And so he said, well, and this was shocking, and I've told Craig this. He said, well, actually, the radar data makes it a north path, but we had to adjust for drift, which makes it into, turns it into a south path. And I said, just a minute, you're telling me that your own analysis, and you didn't say this at the conference or in anything that you write, that your analysis, your initial analysis is that it's a north path, and that you then kind of artificially compensate for that to put it into a south path? And he said, yes. And I started screaming. I started yelling that out loud. And then people started gathering around the table. And I said, Warren, I want you to repeat this for everybody. And he repeated it for everybody. Okay. Now, I consider that, I don't believe that Warren Stutt is part of the cabal. I think he has been used by them, but I could be wrong about that. So, you know, the cabal is really bad news. But I agree that the cabal members are bad news in this new organization, the International Center for 9/11 Justice. However, I believe that that it's a good thing that James Gourley is, we were told by Ted Walter about a week ago or so, we were told by Ted Walter on the 9/11 war room that James Gourley will essentially be the decision maker as to what gets into this debate forum. And that's not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing. He is one of the two people along with Graham McQueen who allowed the Pentagon to be a discussion topic at the Toronto hearing. The other person that I don't have a problem with is Ted Walter. Ted Walter was just on Redacted that has 2 million subscribers, and in the first 24 hours there were almost 500,000 views. And he's an extremely hard worker. I've never heard anything negative about Ted. So, you know, I'm going to keep an open mind. I'm going to, you know, as they say, if it's corrupt, their fruit will be corrupt, and if their fruit isn't corrupt, we will see. I'm going to wait and see myself. So, thank you for hearing me out.
Okay, Barbara, thank you for sharing all of that. Do either or any of the presenters want to respond to that? Are you ready for the next question?
I'll give a quick response. I have nothing in particular negative to say about James Gourley, so I'm not going to criticize him. Although when you say he let the Pentagon into the Toronto hearings, he just a little bit. He didn't really. You know, he allowed you to come in and give a 25-minute presentation, which certainly was better than not allowing that. But he didn't allow CIT to be involved, and he didn't even, you know, they were, as you said, you weren't even allowed to use the word plane.
I actually did speak for more than 25 minutes because Richard Gage was supposed to be there after the 25
right.
minutes, and he wasn't there yet. So I did speak longer than that, and they did allow me to use the name, and they did allow me to answer the question by the panel and Judge Imposimato about the planes, and I was very blunt.
Yeah. Well, yes. I was there, as you recall, Barbara. In fact, you got
yes.
me into the.
yeah,
I only
yeah, that's
got
right.
into the chamber with your help. So.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Craig,
did you actually? Did you try to speak, Craig? Did you formally try to speak with either Graham McQueen or James Gourley?
I never met. No, I did have a nice. I did chat with Graham McQueen, sort of in between. You know, sessions and things. So I got, but nothing formal, and I didn't meet Gourley.
No. My question is beforehand. Did you approach them to speak?
No. I don't think I was qualified at that point to be a speaker. You know, I was like cramming, you know, cramming my head
okay.
with information. So I wasn't asked to speak, but I did think CIT should have been invited to speak.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Well, my understanding from talking to Graham McQueen was that, let's see, that would have been Craig Ranke. My understanding was that Craig Ranke said no, but I could be wrong about that. You should ask.
No, I think what, because I wrote about this at the time and I interviewed, because actually there was a Barry who's on the call tonight. Organized another session that took place the night of the final day of the conference. So it actually did not, it didn't conflict with the conference, but it came right at the end where there was a screening of the CIT film National Security Alert at a theater in Toronto. And so I got a chance to meet Craig Ranke there. But what happened was, I did an article basically where I interviewed Craig Ranke, where he said that he would have declined the invitation even if it had been given to him.
So I remember that. I don't think it's really fair. I don't think it's fair to say that he wasn't invited.
I think it is fair to say that. He wasn't invited.
Whether he would have accepted or not is
a completely separate point.
Well, okay.
Can I chime in here for a second? This is Adam Ruff.
Yeah.
One point I wanted to make about this is that just the language that was just used about that conference, I find it problematic to say that, the Pentagon discussion was allowed to happen. You know, any 9/11 truth conference should be begging for Pentagon researchers to give evidence. They should be begging for that, not allowing it grudgingly. But aside from that point, I just wanted to make one quick reference that a lot of people aren't aware of. I've been researching for another project, and I've been researching the origins of Homeland Security. And I don't know if any of you are aware of this, but Homeland Security hired a consultant to come in when they were first setting up the department. And that consultant, his name was Marcus Wolf. And Marcus Wolf was the head of the East German Stasi.
That's right.
So Homeland Security hired one of the most notorious spy masters to come in and set up their whole department.
A communist spy master.
They were notorious for recruiting many, many civilians and creating a climate of fear and they infiltrated everything. So that's the climate we're in now, and that's reality. I just wanted to make that point.
Yeah, he was a he was the communist spy master in East Germany. Yeah.
And I just wanted, before we move on to the next question, which we should do, I just wanted to just add one last little remark about when, Barbara, you said, you know, that you praised Gurley and said that he offers some balance to, you know, Chandler and Ryan.
Well, he may. I didn't say, I said I'd keep my mind open and see what they do.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah. Fair enough. I would just like to add the comment that I don't think balance is good enough at this stage. I don't think we want to have organizations where we balance good truthers with infiltrators. I think at the very least, even if you don't agree with me about David Chandler, and I haven't specifically called him an agent, by the way. I said that this is an operation that is COINTELPRO. It's always possible that it's unwittingly, caught up in it. So I leave that judgment to individuals. But at the very least, you don't need the same people involved in several different organizations at the same time. You need some variety. And the last thing that this new organization, if we're going to give it a chance, which I don't feel inclined to do based on its makeup, if we're going to give it a chance, then it doesn't need David Chandler on the freaking board. He's got his fingers in enough pies, he's done enough damage, and he doesn't need to be there. But we know why he's there, because he wants to exert control over every little corner of the movement that he possibly can. So I just wanted to make that point that I don't see balance necessarily as such a desirable
thing. Well, of course, I didn't mean that balance was a good thing. It's just that given that Gurley is there, what I know about Gurley and what I believe I know about Ted Walter is that it's not as bad as it would otherwise be.
Well, I guess we'll see.
How do you get on the queue? How do you get on the queue?
Yeah.
Would you like to, is that Frank? Would you like to ask a question?
Go ahead, Frank. Okay, a couple of points. On this James Gurley McQueen and Ted Walter thing, I've been in a lot of organizations in my 80 years, and what they serve as is cover, because they're going to be outvoted under any circumstance. There's going to be complete control for the other cabal over these people, but it gives them cover. That's the point. What I'm saying is Gurley may be good, Ted Walter may be good, and I have no doubt about that, but they serve as cover, and I just think that they should be dissuaded from being on there, because their purpose is to provide, as I said, cover. So that's my first point. The other thing is, vis-a-vis Kevin Ryan, I think the fix-in was a long, long, long time ago, because at the conference in Hartford that Kevin Ryan attended and gave a speech, Cheryl can correct me about the year. It probably was the sixth or seventh year after 9/11. I had the opportunity to drive into the train station after the conference, and I asked him about the Pentagon, and he says he doesn't want to go there. He doesn't want to say anything about it because it would be insulting to the families of the people on board. So at that point, 5 or 6 years after that, he was already on board about being anti-Pentagon.
Yeah, and he doesn't say the same thing about the World Trade Center. He goes on and on about that, not worrying about the people on those planes, right, and their families.
Right.
Yeah.
And in terms of changing stories, the story you gave, Barbara, about your tete-a-tete after the conference, I had the opportunity to hear Governor Kane speak here up in the Berkshires, maybe 10 years ago. He was invited. It was a regular conference series, and I had the chance to ask a question of him. And I asked them why the timelines kept changing as they were going along during the conference. They kept changing them. He says, well, you know, the government was coming in and the Pentagon was coming in with all these different timelines and stuff like different timelines that they were contradictory. He actually says this. And he says what the committee decided to do was to make up their own timeline.
Yeah, that's right. You're talking about the chairman of the committee, Thomas King.
Governor King actually said, he said that the committee made up the final timeline of all the events on September 11th.
That's right. They made it up.
I was working with someone who his friend was on one of those planes, and the police came, and a lot of people really died in some of those plane crashes. So you got to think of what the government did to take those planes and bring people into whatever you call it to gas them to death. You know, that was another issue because there were real planes where people died. So, you know, it's not so simple. I mean, a lot of people really died on the flight.
Yeah, but they didn't die at the Pentagon. They didn't die at the Pentagon. They didn't die at what they call Chambers Street, downtown New York.
Yeah, you guys.
Again.
I'm just gonna say it one last time. My proximity to the event, my proximity to it opens doors, and I stumbled into everything. And there are people on this call right now to confirm that. And so again, you know, the Orion Project is a movement. It is my full-time job now. You know, this is what I do. You know, if you know Craig McKee, if you know Adam Ruff, then you know me. So stay tuned. We're going places.
Why are you calling it the Orion Project?
Because the Orion was the baddest hunter in the sky. I'm a constellation geek. So.
Yeah. Well, Orion is it represents the pharaoh in ancient Egypt, of course.
Oh, really? That's pretty cool.
Oh, yeah.
Very cool.
Cheryl, may I ask a question?
Is that you, Kat? Is that Kat?
Yes.
Yeah. Go ahead, Kat. Yeah.
Well, in New York, there's it's not necessarily a new organization, but they have a whole new look and feel. It's called TAP. What did TAP stand for? I'm just wondering.
Truth Action Project.
Yes, exactly. Thank you. And I believe it was Sander Hicks who kind of ran it. I don't know now, but they just recently sent out a whole new thing. You know, we're up and running with a new look and new ideas and stuff. And I was never involved in the original one. Well, I was kicked out, but that's a different story. But I was wondering if your guests, in addition to this new organization that David Chandler and Atal are with, do they know anything about sort of the reboot of TAP?
Well, I don't really know what's been going on at TAP in recent, months. I know that at one time, their content was basically being controlled by Wayne Costi, and so he was the gatekeeper there, and he convinced them to to take a position that a large plane is the Pentagon. At some point, I believe there were some financial irregularities that led to his departure. I won't go into it more than that because I can't give more detail than that. But at some point, I think while Costi was even still there, they dropped that position. They took a neutral position on the Pentagon. I'll say one thing about this idea that, you know, sometimes a group is takes a neutral position, like this new organization. They're completely neutral about, you know, the question of the Pentagon. But this is a 9/11 truth organization. Why the heck are we neutral when we've got so much evidence? Like, why is that seen as a good thing? See, this is part of the point that I make is that this cabal has poisoned the well so much that now just even taking a position is like a partisan thing. You know, just taking a position on the evidence, which is right there in front of our noses, is like a partisan thing. And that in itself is damaging. So unfortunately, Kat, I don't have much to add in terms of what TAP is doing lately. I know that it used to have Bill Jacoby working there, and I think he's a suspicious character, but he's not involved anymore.
Bill Jacoby was the liaison of the cabal on the lawyers committee until he was removed.
Right, right. So
yeah, I've
so,
heard bad things about him. What about Chuck Fall, F-A-L-L? He's the one who sent out this newsletter.
I don't know much about Chuck. I've just heard the name, but I don't have any information to give you on that. I mean, there's some definitely. I mean, Dan Hannon, I think, is still involved there, and he's a good guy.
Yes, Dan Hannon is a really good guy. He's the treasurer.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. All right. Well, it just came out like yesterday, and I was like, oh, okay. Well, this is an interesting reboot. And then I saw the other one that's coming out. Like, some new things are happening with 9/11.
Yeah, I guess my fear would be, you know, I mean, are they new things, or are they just, you know, things that are going to give people the impression that things are happening? You know,
right.
sometimes I think more effective things can happen with fewer organizations and maybe more work going on. You know, I mean, yeah, we could keep creating new organizations, and then everybody sort of gets a warm and fuzzy feeling that,
yeah,
you know, that we're doing all this great stuff. And you know, I would question whether this new organization is going to, you know, do anything.
I got that same email that Kat was mentioning, and I think what they said they were doing is they were dropping the 9/11 in front of it, the Truth Action Project, so they could talk about other issues like COVID or whatever else is going on.
They've
so,
been doing that for a few years now, haven't they? They've been talking
yeah,
about
that's
other
why
issues.
Those, yeah.
Yeah. So
that was the why they
interject
there.
Something here. Let me just interject something here. This is Adam Ruff talking.
Okay, go ahead, Adam.
Imagine yourself as let's suppose you yourself were an operative, and your work assignment was to take down the truth movement, or delay it, or stop it, or render it useless. So, what would you try to do? What would make your work product successful? If you were a spy, the most success you can have is to infiltrate the enemy organization up to the highest possible level and even take control of that organization. That would be the ultimate success for an infiltrator, would be to rise to the top of an organization and take it over.
Yeah.
And I've actually seen that happen in our Connecticut peace group. I think the Green Party in Connecticut, I can't speak for other states, but was the same, taken over. So, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a very effective strategy, and I don't know how we combat that, but I think we need to think about that.
I haven't spoken about this publicly to anybody. This is real talk. So one thing that I find very interesting about Nelson, about Ed, and about Kermit is that they basically go to the libertarian kind of place. They that's the space that they try to go to the most. And it seems to me, if I had to bet, I would say that in our lifetimes, Republicans and Democrats could go by the wayside, because it can be argued, you know, many times over that we are just infiltrated all over the place. But it seems to me that their strategy is to go to the middle. And I've started to investigate some of the people that they're involved with. And one of them is a podcaster. He's a libertarian. His name is Reed Coverdale. He runs a group called the Naturalist Capitalist. Well, some of you might know Reed. He is partnered with Ryan Dalton. Well, Ryan Dawson admitted not long ago, in the last few weeks, that he was working with Nelson, with Kermit. So I don't know what you guys know about him, but it's safe to say that that's happening. What concerns me the most, there's an individual, and I'm not accusing anybody of anything. I just question people that hang out with people like Adam Fitzgerald. Or no, anybody can be fooled by these people, but the people that they're hanging out with, One of them was on a election campaign for Tulsi Gabbard. And so it can be said that Tulsi Gabbard is a World Economic Forum young leader. And so, you know, we can play this a lot of different ways. And I believe that Adam Fitzgerald is going to listen to this. And it's, you know, dude, I don't know what to say, but, you know, remember the time you made fun of me about quitting my job and moving away and starting this whole thing? Well, it's happening. So I said to you once, and I'm going to say it again, remember your words. But you guys, yeah, there's a lot going on right now, and it's big. And, you know, the book's going to show it all.
You know, birds of a feather flock together. I think that's what we've got to realize here, and know them by the fruits that they bear. That's how we defeat them. That's how we expose them. But it's not necessarily a polite process. And, you know, I can't tell you how many times I've gone to a forum and I've started talking about Pentagon evidence and how can you confront someone who's lying without saying they're lying? You just can't do it. So being polite and cordial to people that are attempting to cover up 9/11 is just not in my playbook. And so I get kicked off of a lot of forums because of that. But, you know, you've got to realize that there really are COINTELPRO people operating in our midst, and you've got to confront them. And, and that's the way we get them out.
I think you should remember that the banks are involved, that the evening of 9/11, George Bush wrote in his diary, the second Pearl Harbor has just begun, and, you know, how it's related to oil and, you know, seven wars created after 9/11 and, you know, $2.3 trillion missing from the Pentagon the evening of 9/11, followed by the Pentagon explosions in the accounting office, and then World Trade Center. There'll be seven takedown, which get were and gold bars and drug confiscates and drug and all trading going on. A lot of money involved with 9/11. A lot. It was the biggest bank robbery in global history. A lot of money. All the money.
Well, that's a really good point, and I'd like to add on to that point real quickly. You know, some of the things that happened after 9/11 tell us a lot about who's involved. Like, for instance, the SEC will not release the names or the information about the people that bought all those put options on the airlines. Okay, so what does that tell you? They surely know who purchased the put options, but they won't tell us. So what does that tell you about the SEC? They're compromised. This is how we detect people that are compromised. It's by what they do.
Yeah. So, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm concerned about whether there's anybody is Cheryl, do we have somebody in the question queue? Because I feel,
we don't know unless they speak up. Does anyone else want to ask a question of the new people who presented? Anyone else?
I do. Can you hear me?
Yep. Go ahead, Kat.
Yeah. If I might have missed it. Do we know who's financing the new ones that Wayne Costi and Chandler are in? Where's their money coming from? We can assume, but do we absolutely know?
Well, I can answer that. Well, I think on the 9/11 war room, I believe it was the 9/11 war room. Anyway, recently. Oh no, it was no. I'm sorry. I believe it was on the Lawyers Committee memorial event last Saturday for Graham McQueen. I believe that that Ted Walter was third speaker. I put on that event, by the way. And Ted Walter was the third invited speaker, Elizabeth Woodward, Barry Zwicker, who's on the call today here, and Ted Walter. And Ted Walter mentioned that, I believe her last name is Margolis, Marilyn Margolis. She is a member of the Northern California 9/11 Truth Alliance, which is basically Ken Jenkins' organization. She, according to Ted Walter, the film that they are doing on Graham McQueen's life's work that will be shown at the Northern California 9/11 Truth Alliance's annual 9/11 Film Festival in the Great Grand Lake Theater in Oakland this year, that she produced that. She put up the money. And I've been told by others in that organization, which, by the way, used to be Richard Gage's organization before he moved for years, before he moved to Idaho. And technically, it's one of I'm a member as well, although it's a long way to drive, so I don't often go. But technically, I'm in Northern California. But anyway, apparently Marilyn Margolis, or Marilyn, she's also on the board of this new International Center for 9/11 Justice. So I believe that she's, putting up quite a bit of the funds.
Well, yeah, that's right. Ted did mention that. I think it's Langlois, I think that's her last name. It's not Margolis. It's like Langlois or something. Marilyn.
Okay, I can't pronounce it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure she pronounces it. I mean, that's a name that would be pretty common up in Quebec, you know, because it's a French name. But I'm not sure if she pronounces it the French way or whether it's sort of an anglicized version. But I did want to just correct one thing in the question that there's no, I see no sort of official mention of Wayne Costey in the new group, although, you know, that's just a formality. You know, if Chandler's there, then you know, you know sort of who's at least supportive. But I don't think Costi's got his name on anything yet. But certainly Chandler does and Ryan does and Elizabeth Woodworth does. Are you okay? Are you good with that answer? Was it Kat that asked that?
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks, Barbara.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, anybody else have a question? Okay, guess not. All right, well, I want to thank the three of you for really looking into this topic and making the rest of us aware of it. I think it's been very helpful for me to hear. And even though, you know, we all know that there is infiltration, sometimes this becomes a distant thought and we don't really focus on it. And I think we obviously know the 9/11 Truth Movement is infiltrated, so who would they be, right? And I guess if you just look at these people's behaviors, it kind of tells you something. So thank you all. And Adam, you're writing a book and having a film coming out. If you would like to present on here when you're ready for that, we would love to have you do that.
I would love to do that as well. And everybody on this phone, I would never charge you for my work. And so please... my email address is just eagle@orionproject911.com. Shoot me an email address, and I'll keep you in the loop as things progress. And, you know, that book is ultimately going to go out to everybody. You know, if it helps one person, it helps us all. And so, you know, we do this.
Could you repeat slowly your email address? I couldn't hear it.
Yep, it's eagle@orionproject911.com.
Oh, Eagle, EAGLE?
Yep. We all give each other cool nicknames.
Yes.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, the three of you, and I will be looking forward to all of that you're working on. That's really great. So I guess we're into the phase of our call right now where we talk about any other new ideas, recommended books, films, anything else anyone wants to mention?
I think we also are supposed to talk about the idea of switching to Zoom.
Yes, Zoom.
We should probably make sure anybody wants to weigh in on that, we do that before we get into other stuff.
Oh, should we do a vote, like on Zoom, or maybe have a discussion first and see what people think?
Well, I would like to hear a couple of thoughts. I mean, not obviously brief. You know, let's keep them brief because it's getting late. But I mean, I don't think there's a whole lot to say. Either you kind of like the idea or you don't. You know, I think the reason it's, you know, I mean, I've been involved. I've gone to a couple of the war room Zoom calls, and we've done some sort of private just with our little group that's been researching the Pentagon and stuff. So it seems to be kind of the direction things are going in, and sometimes we have audio problems sometimes with our conference call, I just wondered if maybe if it would also maybe reinvigorate some interest in the monthly call if we were to do it using Zoom. And of course, it doesn't obligate anybody to be on camera if they don't wish to. You can just turn off your camera and mute yourself the same way you can on the phone. So it's very much geared to, you know, the same things we do, you know, presentations. It would be easier in terms of visuals, you know, in terms of if somebody had a PowerPoint that they wanted to, or photograph that they wanted to. You know?
My experience, I've had a lot of experience with teleconference calls as well as Zoom calls, and Zoom is so much more, I don't want to say secure, it's just so much more reliable because it goes over the internet. It doesn't go through the phone systems, and
right.
It's much more easy to control from you know, whoever's hosting, et cetera. I find that's a lot easier also. So
that's a good point because we have been having problems with people trying to dial in and not being able to get through on one number or the other number or something. So yeah, it's a good point that it's internet based.
So you have the free you can use Zoom for free for 45 minutes. Other than that, you have to pay a fee past that. So we usually go past 45 minutes.
You can use. I'm happy to let you guys use the Orion Project Zoom. I have paid Zoom, so it's all good.
Oh wow! Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's awesome. Yeah, Adam made that offer, and that's. Yeah, that's fantastic. That would.
Hi, this is David Rold. I have a comment about this. I'm sorry I haven't been on the call for a long time, but this
welcome
call,
back.
It's sort of nice having a call that's not on Zoom. That's like accessible to people who don't have a smartphone or a computer, you know. So.
Well, that's a good point too. That's a good point too.
There may be a way to include people from a phone line, just a regular phone line, on a Zoom call.
Yes, I think they can phone in. They can phone into a Zoom call.
Yes, absolutely.
One of the big advantages of Zoom is that we can easily share links and visuals and videos and all the email addresses and everything that we want to exchange. It's much easier.
Yes.
Well, it sounds like we should go for it. What do you think, Craig?
I lean that way too. You know, initially my thought was I don't want to. You know, I mean, what I've been doing tonight basically is I've been pacing all over the place as I've been talking.
Yeah.
It's just helped me to sort of burn off the extra energy that I build up when I'm speaking to an audience of some kind. But, you know, I can survive.
check the video off, that's all.
I probably would not do that all the time if I were, but no, I'm making a bit of a joke, like the downside, you know, that I sort of perceived, which is that, you know, that I have sort of be more, you know, have to be more presentable, or whatever, is a pretty minor thing. And as you say, we can always click off the camera if we want to go and make ourselves a sandwich or something in the middle of the call. I would definitely think, and I think too, that there's a lot of competition, you know, there's different calls going on. And, you know, maybe it's a good idea for us to try to, you know, keep up with the times kind of thing and not sort of allow ourselves to be kind of left behind by, you know, by other calls that maybe might seem more attractive to people because of the video component. So I would be in favor at this point.
Well, thank you.
So, does someone want to say something? I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm for Zoom, but, you know, I live in New York City, and nobody goes down to Ground Zero from a 9/11 troops. And if you saw how they're creating social engineering near schools made out of the lies of 9/11 and how they are using 9/11 to even attack the firemen and the police and create...
Oh, Fern, can I just ask you to hold that thought for a moment and let us finish the discussion on Zoom, and then we'll come to what you're saying there, okay?
Zoom is really important. I like Zoom. I go to a lot of Zoom meetings. Thank you.
Great. Okay.
Great.
I don't know, Craig, when do you think we could have that? Could we do that? So next month we're going to do our call a week early. It'll be on July 19th because I'm going to be traveling on the 26th. So just so everyone knows that. And do you think we can be ready for then, Craig? Can we learn all the systems?
I would suggest maybe that since we're doing a bit earlier, that maybe we should shoot for the month after, just to, you know, and then we can kind of, I think that would be preferable. It'd be good if you and I were both available for the, you're available for that one, but I don't know. Maybe I'm just a natural procrastinator. I don't know.
All right, so the next meeting after that is August 30th, so that should give us time to...
Yeah, why don't we shoot for that one? That's kind of like, you know, the fall season getting rolling, and then that'll give us time to kind of iron out the details. Like, there's still some things about Zoom that I don't, really know how to, use properly.
I won't let you fail, buddy. I got you.
Beautiful.
Okay. I'm sorry, I didn't hear that. What was that?
I think Adam was just saying he would be, there to help me to understand how everything works and everything, which I
that's great.
Appreciate.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Good.
Is anybody is there anybody else that wants to weigh in or?
So, all right. Well, I guess thank you for everyone's comments on that. That was helpful to hear. Any events or anything people want to recommend or share? I have a book I want to recommend that I just learned about and I got it. It's really pretty interesting. It's called Transcending the Climate Change Deception Toward Real Sustainability, and it's by Mark Keenan. And he connects all the dots from 9/11 to COVID to the bankers to it and the climate change thing. So it's a really good book. I just wanted to mention that. Anybody else?
Barb?
Go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't know if I was muted or not. In terms of it's not actually the lawyers committee, but it is our lawyers committee. Litigation Director Mick Harrison, he also represents other 9/11 individuals and truth groups, including architects and engineers. And so, amazingly, a NIST case for NIST's refusal to correct its report after, we have to acknowledge that David Chandler got them to agree that there was free fall at World Trade Center 7 in the first, one-third of its height or so. So they have refused, subsequent to acknowledging that in a letter, that there was free fall. They've still refused so far to correct their original text report. And so A&E sued, and Mick Harrison is representing A&E. And amazing, miracles happen. The case has been accepted, and Mick will be in person arguing in D.C. federal court on September, on the morning of September 8th. So if anyone is there and you get to the courthouse, soon enough, it will be open to the public.
Wow.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Yeah, it is.
Wow.
Wow. Bless you, people.
Now, the other thing to know is, I think everybody knows that the Lawyers Committee, now I'm speaking on, not on behalf of the Lawyers Committee, because it's our policy, there have to be at least two of us to actually speak officially as part of the Lawyers Committee, but I am knowledgeable because I am the board chair, and it is public knowledge that public information so far already that the our main World Trade Center grand jury petition we lost at the district court in New York, Second Circuit. We lost at the appeals court. We went to the Supreme Court. Supreme Court didn't take the case. So that popped it back to the appeals court decision. Now is binding on all of the entire jurisdiction of the Second Circuit, but only the Second Circuit. But, of course, that includes New York, where all terrorism cases have to be argued and adjudicated after 9/11. So we do have catch 22 for those of us who are trying to do something. So we do have a plan B. We are about to initiate our plan B. It's been a very difficult decision for the Lawyers Committee because there are pros and cons of all the different possibilities to try to go around the U.S. Attorney and the appeals court. And we do have a strategy now. We did vote on it exactly a week ago, and it was almost a unanimous vote, so the Lawyers Committee does have a plan B, and we will be announcing that at the very earliest in mid-July and at the very latest in early August. So can't tell you anything more about it, but it's going to be big.
Thank you.
That sounds good. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anything else? Anybody?
I'm down zero, Barbara. You must see what it looks like. You must see what they're doing to the people. The propaganda.
I'm not sure I heard that. I don't know what was just said.
It's Fern. Come down to Ground Zero and see the propaganda they're putting on the people, on the Ground Zero shopping center and performance center. You've got to.
Oh, I have. Fern, I have. I've personally done the 9/11 museum virtual walking tour. If you haven't seen that, believe me, I've been there.
I know. I saw that. But today it's even worse. I mean, you got to see what they're doing there. You got to look. You got to see it.
I may be, Richard Gage and I may be at a conference, a 9/11 conference in New York on September 9th. So if I am there, I will go see.
Oh, yeah. It's not a joke. They're making a joke out of it.
Wow.
Yeah.
I actually think that the COVID, the whole COVID thing has opened up a lot of people's eyes to 9/11 who wouldn't look at it prior to this. So I think they're getting nervous because more people just aren't listening to them anymore. So, So, anybody else want to add anything? Okay, well, again, thank you to our presenters, and we'll see you all on the 19th of July, and thank you for joining us, and for everybody sharing. I always learn from listening to everybody else. Appreciate
that.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks a lot.
Good to see everybody.
See you next month.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.